deeply rooted in the Syracuse, New York community. A piece of the fabric of this town where people's hard work mirrors the effort of their teams they love to cheer on. If it's pregame, it's Dan Totora coming to you live from Orange Crate Brewing Company on 721 South Krause Avenue.
Tortora live here from Orange Crate Brewing Company, 721 South Krause Ave. Everybody listening on the live feed, mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt, and you can find it on wakeupcalldt.com's homepage. Syracuse Clemson going up today here in a very, kind of snowy Syracuse, 36 degrees outside. This is where I feel like Syracuse should be playing those outdoor games again, to put teams in situations like this, like a Clemson or Florida State, to be out with flurries, 36-degree weather. I think they'd be better off, but this team, either way, has been struggling no matter what. The issue is, and I'm here with Rob Drummond, as always, Syracuse, NFL, and CFL, along with my co-host. And the issue with Syracuse this year, and I think you can agree with me on this, is that it's not that they don't have the talent. It just seems like the talent isn't being used properly. Would that be fair to say?
It'd be definitely fair to say. The simple fact that the ball's not bouncing their way. And that's frustrating, you know, and you can look at all the players, you can look at the coaches, but that starts, you know, starts with the head coach. You know, the head coach makes all decisions. He's the one where they're winning, he gets all the praise. When they're losing, he gets all the, you know, all the ridicule. So the head coach needs to reel things in. He hasn't done it this year, didn't do it last year. I can sit here and go on a tangent about things that aren't getting done and not being done, but I'm not up there on the hill each and every single day like when I played. So as an outside observer now, I'm a fan now, I'm a parent now, you know, but I know the inner workings of what it takes to be successful at Syracuse, because I was, along with my team, successful at Syracuse. You know, so when you got a lot of grumbling from former players, you know, you got a lot of grumblings from former coaches about things not getting done, it makes it very frustrating.
And when you look at, and a lot of fans don't know about this, but in the last few years, the former Syracuse players haven't been welcomed back into the program. Scott Schaefer not doing too much. Doug Marone didn't do a lot either. What does that say about this city that, you know, the fans, they want the fans to get behind the team, but you, Don McPherson, Schwades, a lot of other guys, a lot of people that are in New York State and are still coming in and out. Don McPherson was just here a little while ago. What does it say to you when you live down the road and Schwades is still here and you have guys like Tim Green? What does that say about this university that they haven't opened the door back to you, and how much of a problem is that as far as putting butts in the seats?
Yeah, it's not a problem for me. I don't play at Syracuse anymore. You know, we won when I was there, but the simple fact that it's funny to be from the city of Syracuse, where I chose to come to Syracuse and play my, you know, collegiate football here and be a part of a program that embraced the city, that, you know, being born and raised in Syracuse and having the carry dome packed every day and going up there and hearing the fans, my own fans, my hometown, cheer for you, you know, and not having, you know, viable athletes on the team that are from Syracuse, you didn't even be able to walk around the city now. And after 30-some-odd years, still have people recognize me, still have people know who I am, still have people, you know, just were still be proud of me or what I did at the Carrier Dome. For a former Orangeman, you know, it hurts to see the program leading or going towards the way it's going right now. Syracuse has definitely lost touch of what it takes to get a university, a college town, back to being a college town and cheering on the athletes and the people that really buy into the program. As former players, we buy into the program. We always want to see our university do well, and we bleed orange. But it's frustrating to be on the outside looking in, and even when you try and get input to try and help them, what's best for them? No money or anything involved, just the pride of being on orange. They just shut the door. Like I said before, we went out as winners. You know, right now they're struggling, they're having a tough time. When we try and look to us for help now, if it's up to us to turn our backs, we won't turn our backs, but it's very frustrating to try and buy into a program that's not buying into the legacy of what it took to get there.
And when you look back on some of the reunions that you had, the late 80s team that brought back, the undefeated team that you had, and everything that you were able to do, besides you, only one other player, one other running back, I should say, has gone undefeated. That was Ernie Davis. So coming from the late 80s and having an undefeated season and having the door shut and not being able to talk to the team about it, not being in the locker room, not being able to get out to these kids and tell them what it takes to win and what you had to go through to win, what can you say if there is another coach coming, which a lot of people think there is? What are your words to that incoming coach, whether they come from Syracuse, whether there's somebody that has connections to Syracuse or is coming from somewhere totally different, what do you want the new coach to know, if there is a new coach, about former players?
What do you mean if there is going to be a new coach, man? Honestly, the thing I would tell a new coach coming in is just understand what it takes to be successful. And then just like anything in life, you know what, you don't automatically just jump into something and become successful. You learn from your predecessors. You learn from the past. And you learn from what it took to get from point A to point Z. You know what? And if you don't do that, you don't embrace that, you'll never become successful. You may get lucky in doing that, but how many people out there as college coaches are gamblers? The college coaching lifespan nowadays is anywhere from 2 to 4 years. And you know what? You better win. And you better win right away. Or if not, that 2 years is going to be shortened to probably 1.5 years. You know, for the simple fact that we know what it took to win games. We knew what it took to play in Major League bowl games, you know, New Year's Day bowl games, you know, national championship, things of that nature. I went 11-0, 11-0-1 my final year with the team, 10-2 the following year. After that, they went to another New Year's Day bowl game, and so on and so on and so on. There's a reason. There's a formula. There's an outline for success that we had. If you don't ask for that outline, that's just your pride taking over. And pride will be the downfall of any man or woman throughout this entire country, throughout this entire world, if you don't listen to others who have done what you're trying to do.
And when you look at what this team is trying to do moving forward, you know, you talk about coaching and the lifespan of a coach now, 2 to 4 years. George O'Leary stepped down, but I mean, talking with George throughout the weeks, I don't really think that it was 100% his idea to leave Central Florida, as well as Frank Beamer, who said to me that he didn't want the university to be divided anymore, whatever that means, and there's obviously more going on behind the scenes. But Frank Beamer won championships. Mm-hmm. Frank Beamer last year beat Ohio State before Ohio State went and won the first college football playoff. Before that, you have 2013 Fiesta Bowl. George O'Leary beats Baylor in a game they weren't supposed to play in, and nobody thought that they deserved to be in except for Central Florida. So we look at Scott here, who's a first-time head coach, but how hard is it around the country to be a head coach when you're George O'Leary and you're Frank Beamer and you can't even keep your job after all the success they've had?
You know, the legacy of old-time coaches, as I call them, because both were around. George O'Leary was here at Syracuse when I was here, and I played against Frank Beamer. He was at Virginia Tech. Well, also when we played against Virginia Tech. But those coaches, they know how to win. They understand the philosophy of the game, you know, the X-ing and the O-ing. And yes, the game has changed. But you know what? There's a success that made those coaches viable to be coaches, to be coaching on a staff that win games. Yes, Beamer was asked to step down. Yes, O'Leary was asked to step down. You know, that's a changing of the guard. That does happen. But you know what? That outline never changes because they won. They learned how to win. Like with us, when we went 11-0. You know what? There are a lot of things that Coach Mack did that made us understand about success and what it takes to be successful. It was like, you know what? You never rest on your laurels. You always get better. So every day in practice, we would try and get better. Every day, me and Michael Owens and Daryl Johnson would go in there and watch film of Jim Brown, you know, of Ernie Davis, of Larry Zonka. We would watch the greats and look at how they did it, look at how they approached the game, because that's what we wanted to be. We wanted to achieve the level of, you know, of not superiority, but the level of accomplishment that they achieved. So in order to do that, we had to learn from our predecessors. And that's the one thing that's lost in this day and age. I don't know whether it's technology, whether it's the youth of the day. I can't explain it, but they've lost the common ground or the common sense to be able to learn from those that have done it before.
And when you look at what you had done and what you had accomplished, I mean, obviously this team has talent, has young talent, has recruited well, I will say that, and bringing in the talent, the number one team of the country, Clemson, is in Syracuse today. You were faced with SEC schools that thought you had no business playing them. Before you came to Syracuse in 1983 when Nebraska came into the Dome, there was little to no across the country people believing outside of Syracuse that Syracuse would beat Nebraska. So what can this team that is going through turmoil, that is going through the reality that the coach might be changing, the whole staff might be changing, what can you say to the players on this team in this game today in the situation that they're in, knowing that they're playing Clemson probably at the worst time in the season for them?
I don't know. Maybe they can sign God as quarterback. No, I ain't even changing it. But all kidding aside, you know, as all I can do is talk about me personally, you know, because I'm an outsider looking in right now, you know, because I'm a former player right now, you know, and enjoying my retirement. It's just tell these young men, it's like you never step onto a field unless you always believe in your heart and in your mind that you have a chance of winning. But in saying that, you have to prepare yourself. You have to prepare yourself mentally. You have to prepare yourself physically. You know, and that goes from the day you walk in off of training camp to the till game day today, till you wake up. Prepare yourself. And I have no idea what those young men have been doing, you know, from last week up until this week to prepare themselves for the game. I have no idea what the coaching staff did to prepare themselves from last week's game up until the point of this game. But in order to be champions, in order to get to that next level, in order to win, Coach Mack always told us, you know what, ignore the extraneous stimuli. By that, he may ignore all the things that are surrounding you, that may bother you, that may, you know, bring you to a point where you forget about what the task at hand is. The task at hand is to go out here and beat Clemson. In order to go out there and beat Clemson, what they did during the entire week will show on that game today.
We're going to take a step aside here. That coming from Rod Drummond, Syracuse NFL, CFL alum, myself, Dan Tortora, live here from Orange Crate Brewing Company, 721 South Cross Ave, down the road from the Carrier Dome. We will be here to continue on the show. The next thing we're going to be talking about, Eric Dungy, concussions, and if this man should have been out there for the last 3 weeks, not just being out of this game, but if he should have been playing against Virginia, if he should have been playing against Pittsburgh and Louisville. So we'll talk about that in just a few minutes here on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, live from Orange Crate Brewing Company.
Hey, this is Dan Tortora of Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, here to tell you that the Orange Crate Brewing Company on 721 South Krause Avenue, down the road from the Carrier Dome, is your home for all pregame, postgame, and during the game excitement in Central New York. Make sure you come out for my live Syracuse pregame shows before Syracuse football and Syracuse men's basketball home games. We'll have a live pregame show for you there with me, Dan Tortora, and special guests throughout the season. Orange Crate Brewing Company, 721 South Krause Avenue, your local Central New York hotspot for all of your bar needs, as well as great food, great atmosphere, and a great time with the Central New York community. Right down the road from the Carrier Dome, be a part of game day at Orange Crate Brewing Company on 721 South Krause Avenue in Syracuse, New York.
Looking at this season and what the team has been through, all the adversity, the close game with Pittsburgh, the close game with Virginia, the moments against South Florida, the moments even against LSU, when you look at the season so far, how do you kind of analyze it, knowing that you were close in a lot of different moments?
Well, the way I look at it, you know, I'm a glass half full type of guy, so I see the good in everything, and we've been doing a lot of great things throughout all of those games, you know, with the close ones and even some of the ones that we let get away from us. But I feel like a lot of the things we did, you know, were on ourselves. You know, the teams that we played, they were all very good teams, but I feel like some of the mistakes, you know, they were self-inflicted. So I feel like when we're at our best, you know, we really compete, and we've showed that. So, you know, we just got to add the finishing touches and, you know, hopefully get a couple wins this last stretch.
What are those self-inflicted wounds, in your opinion, when you look back on games? What are some of those things that you put on Syracuse and not on the opponent?
You know, just certain things, like if some of us are out of our gap, or, you know, we blow a coverage and things like that, or, you know, we miss a read on offense or something like that. You know, just things we always do in practice perfect. You know, just get in the game and you might make a little mistake. You know, when you get against those big teams like we played, some of those things can be costly. So, you know, we just have to be able to execute when it comes to that time.
You saw the community after the LSU game, despite the loss, kind of get hype, wake up a little bit, and now they've kind of gone back down again. How do you feel the community has kind of taken this team in this season? Would you like to see more, or how do you kind of view the response that went up for LSU but now has kind of gone down a little bit?
You know, I can't blame them for how they feel. You know, I believe we've been giving a really good effort all season, but maybe the results haven't showed that. You know, hopefully we're just trying to come out here and, you know, hopefully get a little bit more support from them, and we'll help them do that, you know, by playing a little harder, you know, hopefully getting a couple wins, you know, allow them to believe in us again.
Looking at the secondary, you've obviously elevated your game to be a starter and to have that opportunity. What have you taken away from guys like Corey Winfield, as well as Antoine Cordy and Cordell Hudson, Juwan Dowles, who have all found their way into starting roles or being able to at least shift into that during the game? What have you learned from the other guys?
You know, I've just learned, you know, seeing their work ethics. You know, we're all very hardworking guys, and, you know, we push each other on the field. You know, we get on each other if somebody makes a mistake, and, you know, because we've all seen each other's best abilities. So, you know, we just always want everybody's 110% out there. So, you know, we just try and push everybody to be at the top level when we're out there.
When you see games like the Florida State game and you're out there, Is it a case of receivers just being faster in certain situations, or is it coverage? How do you kind of view some of those moments where there's that pump fake and they throw over top and you guys are left chasing? How do you kind of look back at film like that?
Well, certain things. You know, Florida State and a lot of those other teams in the ACC, they are very fast. But I believe, you know, we could put ourselves in situations that, you know, help us to deal with that speed, because we do have some fast guys as well, you know, that can cover those guys. But, you know, it's just reading your keys and playing your technique and trusting it. And, you know, we've been doing it, you know, we do week in and week out during practice. So, you know, when it's game time, we just have to be able to perform.
When you're dealing with the speed of some of these wide receivers, what are some of those things that you can do if you feel like, you know, after the first few plays that somebody's getting by you, or maybe their speed is to a, maybe one step or two steps ahead? What are some of the things in technique that you can personally do to make sure that you stay in, obviously, in front of them as they go down the field?
You know, there's a couple of things you can do. You know, before the snap, you might be able to give them a couple more yards off the ball, or during the play, you might be able to open up in your back pedal a little faster and things like that. You know, just make sure you have clean hips, open up right away, and, you know, just don't leave any room for hesitation. If you're going to make a decision, just make it fast.
Playing at the safety position, being a help, you know, obviously on the secondary, what can you say about the corners that you've played with on the field so far? When you're out there helping, how do you kind of assess the way that they've played some of their coverages?
Well, when we're out there, we're constantly communicating, so you can see when a guy's getting down on himself, or, you know, just read body language. So, you know, I always like to, you know, give the guys a little bit more incentive, you know, a little upbringing, you know, when we're out there, you know, just keep our head up, move on to the next play. You know, we're a family out there, we got each other's back, so, you know, it's always just in our best intentions to make sure, you know, we're all up performing to our best ability out there.
Have you seen the guys in the secondary hang their head a lot this season? I mean, how has it kind of been out there in certain situations, like a Louisville game where the game gets out of hand a little bit? Have you had to kind of pick up guys more than you thought you would, or, you know, is it something that you've just feel was a natural part of the game?
No, I don't think the guys were hanging their head too much. You know, of course, you know, you're going to have some negative plays, but, you know, it's all about how you come back. So I feel like we've all had a very positive mindset about going on to the next play. Nobody's really been, you know, hanging their head and then just, you know, just falling out on the wayside. You know, we've all been very positive and, you know, just trying to move on with it.
This staff with Scott and with everybody else, you know, Fred Reed as well as Chuck Bulla, brought you in, brought a lot of the guys in, a lot of these young guys that have been making the plays for Syracuse offensively, defensively, and on special teams. When you hear the noise on the outside of, should the staff be here anymore, how do you handle it as a player who, you know, this staff believed in you and they brought you in? So how do you kind of handle hearing stuff like that?
Well, you know, really, I'm not a big guy that looks at a lot of the media stuff outside of what we're doing. You know, we have a big motto, you know, just ignore the noise. So, you know, we can only control what you control. What we control is how we play and perform these last three games and how we our preparation for these last three games. So those are really the only things we can worry about.
When you look at the offense, you look at special teams, being a part of the defense, do you feel that when some of these games happen, when these losses happen, that there's trouble amongst the three units, or have you guys tried to kind of hang tough through this? Because there are those points of, you know, something happens, somebody gets down, somebody gets upset. How do you feel defense, offense, and special teams have kind of handled going through some of these losses?
Well, like I said before, you know, we're a brotherhood. You know, we always got to stay each other, you know, pick each other up when somebody's down. So, you know, we understand that we've all struggled all three phases of the game at some point in time, and, you know, we just look to our other brothers to, you know, help pick us up or pick somebody else up. So, you know, we don't want to get too down, and we're always just staying positive around each other and bringing good vibes to the group.
Playing for Chuck, playing for Fred, playing for Scott, and the rest of the staff, what does it mean to you at this point? Do you feel like you have the right leaders in front of you?
I believe so. You know, there are guys, you know, that preach physicality and, you know, aggressiveness. And I believe, you know, that's something that one of our main focuses on defense, you know, just, you know, trying to put fear into the other team, you know, have fun and fly around while we're doing it. So that's something that we've been preaching, and it's something I think the guys have, you know, took upon themselves to, you know, to protect.
Lastly, with Clemson, obviously they have a lot of speed once again, and you saw it with Florida State. What have you seen on film from their receiving core, and what are you trying to do to prepare for the fact that, you know, these guys are obviously multi-talented and there's going to be numerous players that are going to be able to do different things, especially some of their young freshmen?
Yeah, you know, they have just a lot of fast guys that they can put anywhere. You know, they take one out, they put another one in, you know, that's just as fast. So they like to spread guys out, you know, try and get to the perimeter and things like that and try and out-leverage people. So, you know, our job is to try and contain them, do the best we can. You know, hopefully, you know, we have a great outcome for it.
Offensively, obviously, you're going up against a very strong defense in Clemson. Just what you've seen on film and kind of how you view that game right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's always an honor, you know, to play the number one team in the nation. And, you know, just being growing up as a little kid, you always dream of that one day. But, you know, watching them on film, everything that everybody's seen, you know, talked about them being a powerful, strong team, you know, well-coached all around, you know. But it's going to be some special to play on Saturday.
The last time the number one team came into the Carrier Dome, 1983, and Syracuse beat them, being in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. How much of the history have the coaches talked to you about? Have they brought up that game at all?
Not so much about that game, but, you know, we know a lot is at stake this week, you know, to take off the number one team if it's possible. So it's a lot of stuff challenging this week. So,
is it possible in your mind, in the mind of the team?
Of course. You know, I always look at the end of mind and just knock off a team that, you know, is ranked higher than you is always something impressive to do.
How do you kind of look at the season so far? Because there's been some of those close games that are hard to watch, you know, especially Pittsburgh game last mm-hmm. 3 seconds and the field goal that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously moments that were lost against Louisville and South Florida as well as Virginia. So when you look back on those games, what did you learn from those moments?
You know, just taking in those losses, probably most, you know, just finish, working on finish, and that's probably the main key. But just a lot of those, you know, knickknacks right there, inches away, but just main point probably just finish.
How do you assess the year right now, how you look at it? I mean, how do you kind of view the team at this point? How would you kind of define the team where they are right now?
Right now, we're a bunch of men, you know, just trying to work hard and trying to finish up the season, you know, on a positive note right now. You know, obviously it's not something that we wanted to happen with the record, but, you know, in the meeting rooms and everything, we're always positive, staying positive, and just going out and having fun in practice and then trying to make something happen on Saturdays.
Offensively, defensively, and special teams, when you go through these hardships, do you see a dissension among the three groups, or have you guys still stuck together through this?
I mean, you know, always there's, you know, arguments on the sideline or something like that, but as a whole, we always stick as one, you know. Always team comes first, and nobody's better than anybody, you know, pointing fingers and anything, but we always stay together.
When you look at the staff and with Scott and with the rest of the guys that brought you in here, what can you say about, you know, on the outside looking in, that there's that conversation of, you know, Scott needs to leave, you know, the staff needs to change, but this is a staff that reached out to you and believed in you when other people didn't. So how do you kind of view that situation of, you know, you're here at Syracuse, you're in your first year, and knowing that there's conversation on the outside of, are these guys going to be here?
I mean, I just, you know, just stay focused on what I'm doing. You know, that's for everybody else to worry about. But the coaches, you know, they're here right now. You know, we're just trying to finish out the season, and we'll go from there.
How does the team, you and the team, kind of handle that? I mean, do you feel a strong bond with this coaching staff?
Of course, you know, they've been here for me since day one. But, you know, whatever anybody else has to say, you know, just leave that for them. You know, it's always a team thing. We always stick together, and same thing.
What's Schaefer say when you're in the meeting room and you're talking after a game, after, you know, some of these hard losses? What are some of those things that he said that you really took to heart?
You know, probably just, you know, just seeing if you gave your all in the field, and, you know, you're the only person who could determine that once you look at yourself in the mirror. But after a loss, you know, we're just on to the next opponent right after that.
Do you feel like at this point, and obviously you're a freshman, you're going to make mistakes, but do you feel like you've given your all up to this point?
Of course, you know, every game, even practice time, you know, walkthroughs, anytime, I always give them all up.
What have you learned about being around this offense and the guys that have been around you with Brizzly, with Steve, with Irv, you know, as well as Jordan and the rest of the guys, Eric, just what you've been able to take away from those players that are trying to make plays on offense with you?
Probably, you know, just try to feed off of each other, you know, because in high school we were all the men of the teams and everything. But, you know, just at the college level, everybody is either as better as you or at the same level as you. So it's probably just – being able to feed off people that, you know, have the same type of game as you. So it's always special to watch them going out there and show out their work.
Not just Clemson, but these last few games. What can you say about your mindset and what you're thinking about going forward here with Clemson, with NC State, and with Boston College on this season?
Probably, you know, just try to finish strong and, you know, take down these opponents, you know, as best as we can. And, you know, just stay in film, you know, just get mental reps, go hard in practice, you know, just try to finish out on top with a positive note.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, live from Orange Crate Brewing Company, 721 South Krause Ave, down the road from the Carrier Dome, here live for Syracuse Clemson. And you just heard, for those listening in, got a special treat on the live feed on mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. You got to hear from Dante Strickland, the true freshman H-back, as well as Chauncey Sism, the young free safety of the Syracuse Orange. And for those that are inside the bar that didn't get to hear from them, to give you some notes on what they had to say, Dante and Chauncey both saying that the team is trying to stay together through this. There has been some emotional times, obviously, as anybody would suspect, but they're trying to be ready, do what they can. And as far as the coaching staff goes, they both said that they're playing for these coaches, playing for this team for the rest of this year. They're not backing down anybody, and they're preparing as best as they can. I mean, you have a true freshman H-back that's been going out there willing to put his body on the line and his game on the line, and Dante has done a pretty good job of that. He needs to be utilized more. And Chauncey Sism is on a secondary that has struggled in the entire 21st century, and I guess we can go there. There are so many freshman wide receivers for Clemson that even if guys like Ray McLeod don't make it out there, even if you don't see them all, Deshaun Watson and what the young receivers can do are going to make it very difficult for Syracuse. What can you say about the secondary? And is it really the secondary's issue, or is it a coaching issue? Because Antoine Corey is a young guy playing strong safety, and he's shown some positive moments. Chauncey Sism has shown some positive moments. Cordell Hudson at corner and Juwan Dowles at corner have shown positive moments. So going into this game, is this a staff issue with the secondary, or is it a secondary issue of itself?
Really?
I love asking you questions, having known you for 5 years. I already know what you're going to say, but I have to ask the questions. Go ahead.
In all honesty, when everyone shows up at any level of football, whether it be Division 3, 2, 1, you know, the 1AA, you know, it doesn't matter. A good coach can take that talent and mold that talent into, you know, into the athlete that it needs to be to fit his system. Has Syracuse done that? Nope. They have not. You know what? So we sit here and we look at these young athletes, you know, and we blame them. But you know what? You need to blame the coaches also for the mistakes that they're making, because they're learning the mistake from the coaches, because of all the wealth that these young athletes may have coming in. You have to remember, they're 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old young adolescents. So they're learning from these coaches. So these coaches are teaching them. And if they keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again, you replace them. Have these guys been replaced? No, they have not. The one good thing that I think is a great thing for Syracuse is that so many young guys are playing. And then when the new coaching staff comes in, which I think is going to happen sooner than later, you know, they're going to have to understand that, you know, we're here as teachers. You know, look at our whole, you know, going to grade school. You know, we learn from teachers, correct? When something was wrong, a teacher did what? Put a red mark on a piece of paper, and boom, we know that was wrong. So we could correct it. These young men need to be corrected. And as coaches, they're teachers. They need to correct what these young men are doing wrong, so they'll stop making the same mistakes over and over again. What I see from out there from the last 3, 4, 5, 6, like you said, 21st century years, you know, if these kids keep making the same mistakes, you can't start blaming the kids all the time, because new kids are coming in. You got to start looking at the coaches. And until you get a staff that can sit down with each one of these kids and correct their mistakes, because that's how I learned. We used to grade out when I was at Syracuse, and me, Daryl Johnson, and Michael Owens would always grade out in the 97th to 98th percentile over every single game, for the simple fact that our Coach Harper or Randy Edson would always sit there and go over the mistakes we made, not just in practice, but in games also, and we would correct those mistakes so we wouldn't make them over and over again. The reason people stay long in the NFL and for a long time is because they limit their mistakes. That's just like life. In life, you limit your mistakes to be successful. If you keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again, you'll be just like Syracuse.
When you look at some of these mistakes, Eric Dungy, quarterback, true freshman, obviously he's talented. He can leap over players. He's not afraid to put his body on the line. He can run the ball. He does a good job, and a lot of people calling it the triple option, but you talked about it's a freeze option that they're running. when we look at Eric Dungy, and we know that he's talented, we know that he's effective, we know that he can do good things, we also know that he has been concussed probably more times than have been reported to the media. Probably more times than people know in here. But he took a hit against Virginia, took a hit against Pittsburgh to put him on the ground for a couple minutes, took a hit against Louisville at the end of a game when they're down by 31, and obviously took the dirty play against Central Michigan. So at least four times taking some pretty hard hits right to the head. What can you say about Syracuse's decision-making to keep a young man like that in the game, 19 years old, getting hit the way he's been hit? I mean, we're talking about not just football, we're talking about life thereafter. You've had 9 concussions that you know of, so let's talk about concussions specifically with Eric Dungy. Should he have been out there playing in the last 3 or 4 games?
I mean, I can answer that as a parent, I can answer that as a former football player, and I can answer that as a coach. Of course, as a coach, if my job's in the line and everything's all, you know, backed up behind me and I need to win, I'm going to put him out there. But as a parent and as a former player, you want to get out there. You want to compete. You don't want to let your teammates down. So you need to do everything you can to get out there in the field, no matter what the consequences. If you die, you don't even know about it. You die. I've been in that situation before. As you said, I've had 9 concussions. And even with the 1 concussion in the West Virginia game, I had 2 in 1 game because I wanted to get out there. I wanted to compete. I wanted to help my former teammates. But as a parent, looking at this young man, it's like, you know what? Honestly, I would sit him down the rest of the year. The simple fact that he's an 18-year-old kid who's trying to learn and understand this game, and he plays with reckless abandon. You want that reckless abandon? But you want this young man to go out here and play this game in an intellectual and intelligent way. And he's not doing that right now because he's only an 18-year-old kid. He's learning the game. But once he learns and understands that, he'll be fine. But right now, he needs to rest. He needs to sit down. He needs to be like, observe the game right now and learn.
When we look at the Louisville game, Syracuse down by more than 4 touchdowns. And at the end of the game, Eric Dungy is still in the game. Now, when I asked Scott Schaefer earlier on in the week about Eric Dungy and about what his thoughts are and how healthy he is, where he kind of stands right now, he ended the quote with saying, "We kept him in because we thought we could score, and then we had a good chance to score, and then we could come back in the game." There was no way to come back at the end of the fourth quarter down by 31. But the quote that he gave at the end of my question is the quote that has been circling around, been in the paper, been talked about in the media all throughout, of what he said. We kept Eric Dungy in because we thought we could score and get back in the game down by 31. Is that quote going to be, that quote, that decision, will that certify that Scott Schaefer's done? Because some people think that keeping Dungy in at the end of the Louisville game was it. Is that it for you?
Let's use common sense here. I've played football for 30 plus years of my life. You know what? From Pop Warner up until, you know, 15 years professionally. And in any given situation, it could be 8 minutes left of the game. You're down by 31 points. You're getting beat up and down the field. You're getting out athleticized. You're getting just beat physically during the game. For you to put one of your star upcoming players in the game and to make a quote, an observation like that, tends to tell me you don't know a lot about football. You know, because one, there's no way for you coming back in this game. So at this point, you know, yes, he's a young man, he's going to learn from going forward. But the simple fact, you get him out of the game, you know, because he has been concussed before another game, and he does play recklessly. So in a game that, you never tell your players as a coach, you know, to take it easy, to let up on a player, or let up on a team. You always go out there and you go 150%. You know, he knows that Dungy's going to go 150%. But the simple fact that you know this kid's probably, you know, higher odds than not, he's going to take a chance where he's going to take a hit that's going to probably get him hurt. And it happened. You know, so for me as a coach, I like Coach Schaefer a lot. He's a great man. He's a great role model. He's good with the kids. But right now, they're struggling. They're in a situation where they're making a lot of mistakes. And it's snowballing. As I said before, I'm an outsider looking in. As I said before also, you know what? I wanted Syracuse, so I can sit here and say that. And as someone who grew up in the city, someone who was born and raised here, someone who bled orange and went to Syracuse University via James Will DeWitt, a hometown person, you know what? I have a lot of pride in this city. I have a lot of pride in this team. I have a lot of pride in the young athletes that go up here and give it 150% every single time. But at some point, we have to put the onus on where all the mistakes are being made. The mistakes are being made by the teachers, and the teachers are the coaches.
And when you look at the teachers, looking around the ACC, I think it was important to, as of November 11th, There were 25 concussions inside the ACC alone. The SEC, who is supposed to be more physical and higher than the ACC, only has 9 reported. Out of all of the 25 concussions as of November 11th, there's no school that has disqualified medically any players except for Syracuse. Have you ever seen this many players disqualified in a year from a university? And you and I don't know, obviously, the physician personally, but have you ever seen this many players disqualified within one season?
I've never in my lifetime seen this many players disqualified, you know, and it makes you wonder. As I said before, I can't sit here and get in the minds of anybody, you know, because I have my own mind, and it's a hoot up there, you know, but I can sit here and say, it's just like, you know what, in most instances, in most cases, use common sense, and you'll pretty much come up with a conclusion that's probably the correct conclusion. You know, we all can take it from our outside observer, look at Syracuse University and tell basically what's going on, you know, for players that should be playing that are not playing, for cornerbacks that get beat constantly all the time, for defensive linemen that are making plays that are still playing. It's just, use common sense. That's the best thing I can possibly tell anybody.
When you look at the fact that A.J. Long, who a lot of people have wanted to see out there, they wanted him to have an opportunity. He got his first 2 touchdowns against Florida State in the Dome last year with Steve Ishmael. Has a good relationship with him. He can run as well. He's proven that he could play when they went up against Clemson at Clemson in Death Valley, held Clemson to their lowest point total in Death Valley last year and second lowest of the season with 16 points. But A.J. Long hasn't been out there. Now, the hand injury and then the concussion, but A.J.'s getting a second opinion. A.J. most likely is gone. Austin Wilson most likely is gone because he's a pocket passer that doesn't fit in this new offense. But a lot of people haven't seen that Austin Wilson has a stronger arm than he gets credit for. So what can you say about the future of Syracuse, knowing that, as far as I'm concerned, from being around these players and being around the school for the last 4 years of covering it, A.J.'s going, Austin's going. So you have Eric, you're bringing in Rex Culpepper off of an ACL injury, you have Zach Mahoney, and maybe Terrell Hunt if he decides to stay with a 6th-year medical redshirt from this past season. So what does that say about the future, knowing that A.J. is going to have a couple years and Austin's going to have a couple years somewhere else, and Mitch Kimball has already left to have his years at another school?
You're worried about the future. My stomach's still turning from the present right now, you know, for the simple fact that it's frustrating, as I told you before, as a former player who understands the X's and O's of the game, who understands being in that locker room, putting on those pads, you know, putting on that helmet, walking out into the carrier dome, being prepared to play a game and just get beat physically, you know, left and right. It was funny that I found it interesting when this summer, when I found out that A.J. was going to be redshirted after playing as a freshman, you know, and then starting as a freshman. And I said to myself, it's like, you know what? They don't want this young man. He's either going to transfer, or they're going to try and find some way to get him out of there. You know, and I just said that subconsciously to myself for the simple fact of I've seen it before. You got to remember, not only did I play 4 years of Division I college football at Syracuse, I also played 15 years of professional athlete. So I've seen these things happen. So I'm not just talking about some conspiracy theory that happens. You know, some of the things that go on, and some of the guys who I see not playing, and some of the things that happen in football, I know because I've seen it before, whether it be across the league or just spent my life doing it. Football wasn't a game for me. It was a way of life. And it was a way of life for me for 20 years. So I've seen everything you can imagine about this game of football. So I said to myself, when that happened to A.J., there's no way that a young man who was talented enough to play for you as a freshman, now all of a sudden you're putting on a back burner and redshirting for a year. It's like, there's absolutely no way. So he's either going to transfer or they're either going to try and find some way of getting him out of there. And the simple fact that now you go into practice, and these weren't even game concussions. These were practice concussions. And all of a sudden now he's not eligible to play. It's just very, very interesting to me. I wasn't there, so I can't go out there and say this happened, or this happened. But I can put deep down inside, I've seen it before, and shame on them. That's what they did to get this young man out of here. But you know what? Anything bad eventually comes to light, or anything good eventually gets exposed also. But all the dealings that what Syracuse is dealing with now, whether it be good or whether it be bad, are eventually going to come to light. We're eventually going to get this program to coaches that believe not just in the kids, but in the city, but in the community, you know, and just in the people that put their heart and soul into Syracuse University football. Because right now, we're not there.
What can you say to the community that's listening in, the community that's standing right in front of us? You played at Syracuse. I was born and raised Court Street. right, you know, 15 minutes away here. Came to the Dome with my dad, grew up here, was around the team, has always known what's going on, even when I've worked out of state, have come back in. Now I'm covering the team again. My company was built in Syracuse, in my hometown. So you and I know what it's like to be a part of the community of Syracuse, New York. What does this community need moving forward to get back into football, to get back into going to the Dome, being a part of the team? What do they need? Because basketball-wise, they show up for Lehigh. They show up for a Lehigh game, 21,000 announced attendance, but what does this city need to get back to supporting the football team, knowing that a lot of these people that are in Syracuse, New York, their families have been here for years? I mean, these are people that have supported the program from parent to grandparent to great-grandparent. So what does the city need?
You know what? Honestly, I sat there and I thought about that like week after week after week. And being a former player now and a parent now, it's the same thing I would probably tell my own children. It's like, you know what? And I always tell my own children the same thing every single time. I can take anything that you tell me. Just be honest. It's like, you know, just be honest. Just be forefront, like upfront with me. You know, if I think it's the right thing to do, I'll agree. If I don't, I'll tell you no. You know, but just be honest with me. And with Syracuse, you know, the hiding of the practice, the bringing in players who eventually you don't want anymore now you're trying to get rid of. And, no, just be honest and upfront. It's like, you know, there's a reason that you're in a situation, as with everybody sitting in this bar right now. There's a reason we're on the situation you are right now. We either did things to become successful or we did things to become not successful. Syracuse is the same way. There's a reason you're sitting in the position you are right now with 3 wins and a 6-game losing streak. You did things now to become successful. Find out what the things that you did that you put yourself in the position you are in life during a football season and correct those things. You know what? The whole A.J. Long situation, you were building off a quarterback coming in into this new season and being able to compete, being able to start. But to declare him, you know, to be a red shirt before he even had a chance to go out there and compete, it's just something wrong. So Syracuse are self-inflicted wounds, just like most people who are unsuccessful. They're self-inflicted wounds. Find out what those things are. Be honest with yourself. Be upfront and honest with yourself, you know, and just move forward. I mean, me personally, I told you know this story. I was told myself after starting as a freshman running back that I wasn't good enough to play Division I college running back. You know what? I didn't let that define me. I didn't let that break me. You know, I just went out. They moved me to wide receiver. I ended up starting as wide receiver, but my heart wasn't in it. You know, and they eventually saw after they went 0-4 and the season started to tank, they eventually realized that I was the most talented running back they had on the football team. And they moved me back, and wow. You know, look what happened. The next year we go 11-0. The final year, my senior year, we go 10-2. So it's amazing how someone who they told wasn't talented enough to play Division I college running back gets drafted in the third round and ends up starting on a team that basically wins its last 21, 22 games out of 24. You know, so never let someone else's opinion of you define who you are. It's one thing I always tell every child because I'm a perfect example of that, because I never, ever let anyone define who I am. I define myself. I make my own rules. You know what? I play within the rules, but you know what? I play it to win and I play it hard. Syracuse needs to get that mindset, needs to get that attitude, and as I said before, learn from people who have done it before.
So when we look at the future moving forward, no matter who's here as a coach, obviously some of these players that were recruited in will stay no matter what happens. If there is a new coaching staff, you always have some defection, but other people will stay. What can you say to some of these young players like the Dante Striglands, the Eric Dungies, the Steve Ishmaels, the Antoine Corys, these guys that have worked their way up to get on the field, the Irv Phillips, to start to be effective on the team, to be a big part of the team, the 5 offensive linemen that were brought onto the team this year, and only one of them has seen time out there, that they're supposed to be the future line from left tackle all the way down to right tackle. They're all playing a specific position. What do you say to the kids that are trying to fight through this adversity, everything going on with the coaching staff, and all the sins of the past, so to speak? What can you say to the current players that are young, that are here in this community wanting the support of the community?
Honestly, I would tell these young men, that some I've talked to before, that I apologize. I apologize as an adult that didn't teach these young men how to be successful. That's the one thing we learned when Coach Mack was here, is that we're a community-based team. So our coaches taught us how to be successful. When things would go wrong, it's like a parent. I mean, I'm a parent now. It's like, you know what? If your children are struggling, what do? You don't just throw them in the bowls and leave them by themselves. As a parent, you console them, and coach them up, and teach them right from wrong, because we've been there before. They haven't yet. They're young adolescents growing up and trying to learn, and we need to nurture them. You know, these coaching staff is not doing it. They sit there and they chastise these kids, or either tell them they're not good enough, or you can't make this, you know. And anyone can make anything as long as they're given an opportunity. If you don't give anyone the opportunity to compete, if you don't give anyone the opportunity to be successful, how do you know? You know what? And I know from example, from the simple fact that I was told I couldn't, but I did. So when you take away the ability of a young man or woman to be able to go out there and become successful, you know, you take away their heart, you take away their pride, you take away their soul, you take away so many things that they could learn from if you would just teach them. Just give these young men the opportunity to be able to go out there and be successful, and let them learn from those that have been successful before. And take your pride out of it. If your pride is so strong that you want to sit there, you have no idea what you're talking about, but you're going to sit there and invoke what you think is right on a young man or a young woman, you know, shame on you. Just like I said, I apologize as an adult, as a parent, to these young men, because you know what? It's us who are failing them, not them who are failing us.
And I want to read before we finish up here, a wake-up call with Dan Tortora, live pregame from Orange Credit Brewing Company, 721 South Cross Ave. My question to Doug O'Sweeney and his response to this, I said, as far as Scott Schaefer as a coach, obviously the first couple of years here he's had struggles, but what can you say about the coach as far as what you're going to see this coming Saturday? And when you look across, what do you think of Scott Schaefer? He said, well, I've gotten to know him over the last 3 years. He's a heck of a coach. He's got a great defensive mind and background. These guys have always been a thorn defensively, especially with the type of things they do. The biggest thing is I see a guy that's building a program. They're really young in a lot of areas, and they've had a ton of injuries. I mean, a lot of injuries. But the one thing that, to me, the measure of a coach is you're going to have years where you have a lot of injuries, and maybe there's some adversity, or you're just really young and you've got to just kind of grow through it. But to me, how do your guys play? As the season goes on, like, anybody can play hard when you're having a good year, but how do you play when maybe things aren't going as well? And that's the one thing I told our team that I'm so impressed with when I watched the tape is, man, these guys, they're physical. They play hard. Their effort is tremendous. They flat out get after you. So they're not worried about a scoreboard, and I think there's a really good sign for Coach Schaefer and what he's trying to do there. And it's unfortunate the world we live in, people put so much pressure. But if they'll stay the course with him, I don't have any doubt he's going to get them where they need to be, because you can tell by how the guys play, the message is resonating, that these guys believe in what they're doing. To me, that's how I look at the job of a coach. So I know there's some things that you agree with, don't agree with in that him saying stay the course with Schaefer, but I think a big thing coming from the Clemson head coach is that he said no matter what the score is for Syracuse football players, defensively, he thinks they're a thorn, and he thinks that these young kids, through injuries and adversity, are getting after it. So I think Syracuse fans need to hear that. The number one team in the nation's coach believes on the tape that these athletes are talented enough to bring it to anybody. And I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from a guy whose opinion you have to respect.
Again, I'll use common sense. He's got to say that. He doesn't want to give Syracuse any bulletin board material to put up there to fire them up. They're coming into a hostile environment. They're on the road. They're playing in a dome that they're not used to playing in. So he's got to say things that are basically going to, you know, give Syracuse or relax them, I would say. You know, what's going to come in and tell the truth? I'll tell the truth. I have no skin in the game at all as far as this football game. They play with heart. Yes, their defense does play with heart. And every time these young men go out there, you know, they put that orange, well, it could be orange, white, blue helmet now because they've changed so much.
Could be gray.
You know, they put that uniform on and they walk out of that tunnel and they carry it. You know what? They play with pride and they play to win. You never prepare. That's with life. You never prepare to lose anything. You always prepare to win. So these young men are going up there and giving 150%. You know what? I can sit here and coach a class of children, you know, in the game of football, and they won't understand that. Or I can just send a group of children out there who have known nothing about football, and what are they going to do? They're going to underperform. They're not going to be able to go out there and perform well because they were never taught Children learn by teaching them. And as educators, as parents, as coaches, we need to teach them how to limit their mistakes and how to go out there and be successful. All the mistakes you see today will be because of the coaches. All the success you see today will be because of the coaches. You know what? Coaches have to understand the integral part they play in the development of the young lives of not just young athletes, but young children in general. You know what? We are the teachers. We are the ones who've been there before. We're the ones who, you know, have the trials and tribulations. We have the experience. As I said before, there are 18-year-olds and 21-year-olds out there playing around. I won't tell my age, but I'll be quite old pretty soon, you know. But I've learned so much from this game of football. As again, I told you, I played college football, professional football for almost 20 years. Longer than some of these kids have been alive, you know. So I know so much about the game that I can teach these young men. You need to learn from your predecessors, and you need to learn from those that have done it before and those that have been successful. And that's what Syracuse is failing.
So as we look forward here and we look at the rest of the games, obviously Clemson on the road against NC State, home against Boston College, what do you want to say to the players going forward for those that are on this team, riding this train, win or lose? What do you, as a former player, since you're not allowed as of right now to go in and talk to them in the locker room, I think an undefeated running back who knows what it takes to win, who went up against LSU, who went up against Auburn, who was the MVP of the game against LSU, should be in that locker room pumping the guys up every single week, in my opinion. But since you're not there, what do you want to say to the players on this team as they go forward with whatever coaching staff they have?
I mean, it's the same thing I tell these young players whenever I meet them here or I meet them any place else. It's like, you know what, keep your head up. As a former player, we have faith in you, we believe in you, we've been there before, we understand what you're going through, so don't ever think you're alone. We understand that, we get it. It's like, you know what, if you want to talk to us at any time, you can always have our number, we're always accessible, and if we're not accessible, we'll make ourselves accessible. Because you know what, at the end of the day, we're a family, and we believe in you. And once this coaching staff goes, or this coaching staff stays, it doesn't matter. We'll support you, we'll help you as much as we can, because that's what family does.
And to finish things out here, to just take a look around the country at going back to concussions a little bit here, knowing that there's been over 130 reported as of November 11th, and the most have come from the ACC, what does it say to you about the game? I mean, is this, when you were playing, not every concussion was reported, and there wasn't a lot of concussion protocol. They would do the simple things of putting their finger in front of your face, asking you how many fingers they have up, whatever, asking you basic questions. Or, like you said, concussion protocol back in the 80s was saying, Rob Drummond, what's today? What's the day of the week? And you knew it was Saturday because you're playing football, so you could say Saturday, run back out onto the field. But looking at concussions now, what can you say about how many there are? Are you surprised? What is the game getting to at this point? And I say that too because Dr. Tim Whiting, who is a chiropractor here in the community, does a lot of great things and knows a lot about concussions. And, you know, outside of just typical chiropractor work, you've done so much to learn about concussions, learn about the body and the brain and how things are affected. So to kind of finish up the conversation, I'll go to you first, Rob. Are you surprised by the amount of concussions we're seeing right now?
I'm not surprised from the simple fact that you have to first define what a concussion is, and Doc can do that a lot better than I can, but it's basically the brain moving within the skull. You know, so that's the game of football. It's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport. You know, so to try and sit here without technology getting better and better and better, it's always going to happen. It's a part of the game. You know, you can choose to be a part of it, or you can choose not to be a part of it. But the way you train, the way you prepare, the way you work certain muscles, you know, you can alleviate it a little bit, but not enough to really take concussions out of the game. Because as long as one force is moving against another force and they hit at a high velocity of speed, it's going to happen.
And then to Dr. Tim Whiting here, who, if you need to go see a chiropractor, you need someone to help you overall with wellness, 315-472-7128 is the number to call for Dr. Tim Whiting, standing over here to my right. We do a show, Wellness with Whiting, on wakeupcalldt.com every single week, and we talk about a lot. We did some research with concussions recently and did a show with that. And Tim, to bring you on here for a second, just what you can say about concussions, what it does to the brain, and kind of what we're looking at, as well as the fact that warm weather could be affecting some of these as well, but just what you can say.
Yeah, so we saw some interesting things the other day where they broke it down between what divisions are happening in, what climates are happening in. One of the biggest things I found was a lot in the warmer climates, and dehydration can play a big role in this, as the fluid that surrounds your brain, protects your brain, you need this for protection. As you get dehydrated, that lessens and you can have a little bit more damage to your brain. So we found that these hotter climates, people are getting more concussions in, so that can play a role. But as Rob said, the sport is the sport. You're going to have these collisions. You're going to have these constant things going on. Technology's better, so they're reported more. We see them more on the sideline and things that we do. And so now it's just being smart and playing or not playing people if they're passing their tests and stuff. It is just going to be a part of the game. We got to be more cautious of it for longevity of these players. We need to really protect them, and hopefully we can make advances with equipment and stuff. But as players get stronger, faster, hits get harder, it's never going to go away. And so it's a thing we just got to kind of deal with and treat it as we go along.
That coming from Dr. Tim Whiting. Once again, you can get in touch with him, 315-472-7128. In our wellness show, you definitely want to listen to the concussion one, because it's affecting players from all across the nation, and it's affecting a lot of players inside the ACC where Syracuse plays. So make sure you listen in Wellness with Whiting on wakeupcalldt.com. Go to the team tab and go down to Dr. Tim Whiting, chiropractor. For Rob Drummond, former Syracuse NFL and CFL player, as well as Dr. Tim Whiting, I appreciate them taking some time out of their schedule, as well as you being here for the show. And I do want to make one final note before we finish up here live. Wake Up Call with Dan Satora from Orange Crate Brewing Company. Whether it's Clemson, NC State, Boston College, Florida State, whoever's LSU, whoever comes up in the future, I do want to say one thing to this city. Since I was born and raised in this city, so I feel like I have every right to say this. No matter what coaching staff is here, no matter if you support the coaching staff or not, the young players that I talk to from 16 and 17 years old, coming in, sophomores, juniors, seniors from high school, they come in to play for Syracuse, spend 4 or 5 years here, get their education, play football, and then go on to the NFL, hopefully. Support the kids, because every single one of these kids, they didn't ask for the coach that they have, they didn't ask for the situation they had or the conference they're in, but they do ask for the support of the Syracuse community. So on behalf of all the players that I talk to day in and day out that are just as frustrated as you are, make sure you go out and support them at the Dome, and thank you for supporting the show. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you soon.